This weekend, only at Macy's, it's our lowest prices of spring. How low? Diamond rings, pendants, and earrings, only $399, originally $1,500. Ninja blenders, now $89.99. And $395 men's designer suits, only $99.99. So if you're wondering why you should shop Macy's lowest prices sale, well, the name pretty much says it all. It's our lowest prices for one weekend only. Starts tomorrow at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We're live on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, Instagram. Maybe you're listening later, wherever you get your podcasts. If so, ad-free versions of this podcast and many more at patreon.com/comicbookclub. And speaking of which...
Alex, surprise yourself. Surprise yourself.
Crazy. I had no idea.
But... Have you been back in acting classes? Because this is really paying off.
This is a Stanislavski, I believe, Justin.
Yes.
Yeah, I was doing Stella Adler, but I switched to Stanislavski.
Oh, huge change. It shows.
What is not a huge change is how much we are thankful for our Patreon supporters. And once a month, we read off their names. Anybody who supports us at the $5 and up level. So here we go. Let's get into it. A big, big thank you to Oitis Larson.
Aaron C. Hollis.
Adam DeRose.
Adam Marks.
Adriel Moreland.
Elena Fontenot.
Andrew Primo.
Andrew Tillman.
Beercat, PhD.
Bradley Hansen.
Bryant.
Kerry Matthews.
Chad Breck.
Chen Smale.
Christina Jaramillo.
Christina Redsfield.
Chris Tara Lizzie.
Clemens Luer.
Corey Chicheri.
Corey Smoker.
Dan Snow.
Daniel Cabral.
Daniel Fuentes.
And wrapping up the Danny Block with Danny Heck.
Kicking off the David Block with David Donaldson and ending the David Block with David Donaldson.
Debbie Gloom.
Dennis Scott.
Derek Maynard.
Doug Sotaway.
Dylan LJ.
Eduardo Martinez.
Emmett M.
Enrique Chumbas.
Gary Meyer.
Joao de Villa.
Perfectly pronounced as always, Ian Rainey.
Ian Thomas.
Isaac Carter.
The mysterious JG.
Jack Foster.
Jake Fry.
James Connolly.
James Kurtz.
Jared Sloan.
Jaron Townsend.
Jason Donahue.
Jeffrey Whaley.
Joe Benton.
John Henderson.
Jonathan Jong.
Jonathan McCool.
Josh Wright.
Joshua W. Broxson.
Joshua Wiggler.
Kelby.
Kevin Kleinrock.
Kieran Broderick.
Cody Thomas.
Lance Kaminsky.
Liwana Thomas.
Luca Sink.
Matt Tice.
Matthew C. Hernandez.
Matthew DePalma.
Matthew Schofield.
Max Baker.
Michael McAuliffe.
Michael Tillman.
Nathan Hall.
Nelson Kelso Martinez.
Nick G.
The much different Nick Grayson.
Official CBC chef Brett Macris.
Stray Bullies. Oren Dix.
Pedro A. Rangel.
Provocative Ambulance.
Rev Mikey.
Robert Pettinato.
Ron Hood.
Roxanne Tyler.
Get my mom's name out of your mouth. Sarah Schottmuller.
Sarah Schaefer.
Scott Carpenter.
Scott England.
Scott Adu.
Servin.
Spencer Pills.
Stanley.
Taylor Bryant.
The Big Flood.
The 12 Badge.
Troy Munoz.
Victor Perez.
Will Buchanan.
Will Diaz.
William Leach.
Zachary Bachman.
Zika's Viral Comics.
And thank you all very much. Apologize to anybody with an even mildly French name.
Yeah. Thank you. That's such a great call. We need some French class in this podcast.
French class? Seriously, thank you so much, everybody who supports us at patreon.com/comicbookclub. If you would like to do so, you can start at $2 and up, and you get the access to our Discord, which is very active and very fun.
Chatty.
Chatting going on all day. Also, our back catalog of podcasts going all the way back to 2011, many of which are no longer otherwise online. And you can get some fun swag and hang out with us. That's the best. Yeah. Best gift of all, I think.
There's so much comic book news, and we talk about it when it breaks.
Yeah, breaking. Speaking of breaking comic book news, let's get to some guests and break some news here. What do you say? I don't know if we will, but we'll have hopefully some nice chats with everybody.
That's nice.
And our first group of guests are two of the folks that are involved in Oddly Compelling, a new documentary that's going to be launching soon on Kickstarter. The subject of Oddly Compelling is the legendary Dennis Kitchen. We've also got Jeff Trexler, who is legendary in his own right. Ladies and gentlemen, Dennis Kitchen and Jeff Trexler, welcome.
Hey, hello.
Hello. Very excited to have you here. Very excited to talk about this Kickstarter project, which has, beyond Mr. Kitchen, a wild array of talent that is appearing in it. But let's start at the beginning. Where did the idea to do a documentary come from? Where did the germ of that start?
Well, it wasn't my idea. I was approached by two filmmakers, I had been a participant in six or eight other documentaries about other cartoonists as a talking head. I never thought the camera would just be primarily focused at me. So I obviously consented or we wouldn't be talking today.
Are you here under duress, Dennis? Blink if you need help.
Semi.
Well, let's talk about Jeff. How did the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund get involved?
Again, they approached me. It was just like that. I mean, they said it was going to be a Dean Martin style roast, but
that's what we're doing today.
I think it was just a natural fit because Dennis is so important in comics history, not just as a legendary publisher, an incredible influence on comics as we know them today, in so many dimensions, but in founding the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. Really, the work that we're doing now is a direct outgrowth of all of his work in founding the fund and keeping it going for now almost 40 years.
Wow. Well, what about the documentary, the subject? I mean, not the subject, but the content of it itself. How did that come together? What has that experience been like?
Well, again, I'm not the filmmakers, but they've interviewed a lot of my colleagues and contemporaries. The most fun part for me is one of the filmmakers, Ted Intorsio, is an animator who you saw briefly taking some of my strange creatures, bringing them to life with my voiceover. So that's very strange and oddly compelling.
How much of it have you seen, Dennis? And what's the feeling like watching a retrospective on your life?
Well, you know, only snippets, to be honest. I don't think they're going to have a rough cut until late summer or so.
Okay. Mm.
So, you know, I have not exercised any veto rights yet. But who knows?
So far, so good then. Well, that's good news. I mean, does it feel nice to be able to, you know, sit back and have people be like, hey, your work really influenced us and, you know, kind of one of the reasons making for this whole thing? Is it nice?
Well, sure, it's nice, but it's, I mean, honestly, it makes me a little uncomfortable. Public praise, not too keen on, but it's nice to see people say nice things. I'm waiting for the people to say bad things.
Yeah. They saved that for the end of the doc.
Yeah, that's the twist. Part. The three quarters of the way through, there's a twist, and it's a total smear campaign. I just want to mention, just as a side note for anybody who's watching live or later for anybody listening on the podcast, it's very weird to be watching the trailer here and seeing you guys come up as talking heads, and then there's a smaller version of your talking head right next to it. Anyway, just a little bit of strange dissonance there. One of the things that obviously comes up a lot here, and you know, this came up in the footage that we were watching as well, is controversy about comic books, book bans, etc. That's been a big part of what you've certainly pushed against, Dennis and Jeff. That's certainly a large part of what the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund is about. Where this is obviously a very big question, but like, how much do you think things have changed? How much have they gotten better? And maybe right now is not the best example, but how have things potentially gotten worse?
Excellent question. Dennis, do you want to jump in or do you want me to take?
Yeah, take that, Jeff.
I'll just start. That is a fantastic question, and there are several different elements of it I want to address. I'm going to actually start with the better, because it's so easy to get. A lot of people get depressed when they talk about it. I actually want to start on an optimistic note to frame it. Nice. And that is, we've already won. Mm. You know, comic books have become mainstream. They are the foundation of 21st century literacy. Part of the reason the fight is so intense is people recognize that there's kind of an old world and an old set of values that's slipping away and they're losing control of. But the force of history cannot be resisted in this one. And although there are going to be a lot of battles along the way and we have to fight those battles, I think eventually we will win. Because culturally, we already have won the big war. So as disheartening as everything can get, I want everybody to be encouraged by the fact that graphic novels and the spirit of Dennis Kitchen's work really is the new normal. It's just a matter of time to get everybody to recognize that. Now, nice. Where things have been tough is that there has been, well, the scale of it is immense. And we are seeing a revival of the accusations against comics from the 1950s, people saying they're subliterate, that they're inherently obscene, that graphic novel is just another way of saying graphic in the terms of graphic sexuality, and that we're teaching this to kindergartners and things like that. There are people who want comic graphic novels banned, and they're specially targeted. There's instances around the country where books that are based in text are being let alone. But graphic novels specifically are being targeted from removal in schools and libraries. And there is a push to criminalize depictions of certain topics, including depictions of sexual activity or nudity, as somehow inherently obscene or pornographic. So if those laws were to be enacted and to take effect and people were, you know, respecting them and they survived constitutional challenge, it could be problematic. But again, I say there's a lot of law on our side. There's a lot of goodwill in our side, and I do think ultimately that will win.
Now, Dennis, could you jump in on that and talk about what it's like to sort of work in a time like you've seen, like the total cyclical nature of like an explosion of like change and then regression and then change. And now it feels like we're unfortunately back in a regressive phase. Can you talk about like working through all of that? That's wild.
Yeah. Well, when I started the CBLDF, keep in mind, that was 40 years ago. The graphic novel was only 10 years old at that time. Wow. And there were not automatically graphic novels in every major bookstore as you have today. It was pre-internet, so you didn't have the extra electronic element to censorship. Back then, you know, I thought it was pretty simple. A shop would get busted once in a while by an overzealous prosecutor or a cop on the beat who didn't like the manager of a comic shop. But it's gotten a lot more complicated and layered, as Jeff said. And the one thing that stays constant is people who want to censor what other people read.
Well, talking about that from the perspective of a creator, then, when you see that we are in one of those regressive periods, I know obviously you are aware of the legal side of things, but is there a, maybe not temptation, the right word, but is there an urge to kind of push even further, to push the envelope even further, to just be like, no, we can stretch this art form in different directions?
Well, I mean, creators are always stretching. That's part of their job. And it doesn't usually affect the fund unless they push it past someone's tolerance, whoever they might be. You know, everything evolves. The comics industry itself has evolved in a number of ways. And the comics, as we know them, have changed so much and so dramatically. They're everywhere now. When I started, you know, comic books had zero respect, and it was a different era altogether. With growing respect, we also have growing scrutiny. Mm-hmm. And you have, obviously, as Jeff mentioned, more school libraries where some books that may be aimed at a teenage reader gets into the hands of a 12-year-old or a 10-year-old or a 9-year-old. And that's when sometimes you have problems. And So there's always going to be tests, always. And the job of the CBLDF in part is to educate retailers on how to be smart about how the possibly objectionable books are on your shelf and whether, you know, a kid can literally read or reach a book that you know they shouldn't have within their reach. There's so many layers to this. But what's gratifying to me is that 40 years later, there's still an organization, it's still strong, and it's there when anyone calls that 800 number and gets legal help promptly.
Yeah. And awesome. we are round the clock at this point. Wow. There are things from coast to coast, from two really sensitive cases that I'm working on right now are in New York and counties near New York City. And it really is from New York to California. And another thing, and I wanted to pick up on something Dennis said, you know, one of the things that makes the current time insidious, you know, one, they're trying to change legal standards to make it easier to prosecute something. One of the things that I'm finding really disturbing is trying to eliminate the standard from obscenity that it's not obscene if it has serious literary, artistic, political, or scientific value. And people are trying to get rid of that so that if it's just about sex, you could go to jail for it, which I think is a criminal move in and of itself. But the other one is online platforms. We have a number of people coming to us because there are a number of like your Facebook and Instagram and platforms around the world where there's a lot of pressure on them to censor material before it's even seen, either by throttling it or banning it. We've even had a number of ads banned by Facebook because of the material that we are advocating for, just merely mentioning it. And I'm working with Facebook right now to get past that. So we do live in a very interesting time.
Sorry to this is a very specific question, but you're saying just having the title of something they've flagged is getting your ad killed.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. It's deemed, the whole subject is deemed a topic that could affect the outcome of an election or a public debate, and Facebook is pulling down our stuff.
I'm curious about what books you're seeing pop up, or I mean, you're talking generally about subject matter, but I've certainly seen genderqueer is something that always seems to be at the top of bad book lists. Mouse, which is crazy to me, pops up pretty perennially. Every couple of years, somebody is like, whoa, enough with that book. Insane. But what do you see? What titles beyond those, or are those the two major ones that keep popping up?
You take it, Jeff, because that's more contemporary.
We're seeing a range of books. Increasingly, we're seeing any book that talks about the issue of sexuality. And it could be anything from a book about famous LGBTQ individuals in society. If you illustrate that, you can name the books. If it's shown up in a library or school, it's probably been challenged in terms of LGBTQ history or talking about LGBTQ culture. Those graphic novels, just as a matter of routine, get flagged. Raina Telgemeier's work, particularly drama, is a frequent target. There's stuff by Dave Pilkey that gets targeted. It's really the full spectrum. Blankets is still a target. Craig Thompson's Blankets is a frequent target.
That's crazy.
And they have their eye out on new books as well. There's actually a bill to require AI rating of new material that could possibly be sold in schools, which means basically anything in the young adult to adult space that's like that could possibly get into a high school library to have AI review all books and identify sexual material. If it has that, then it could have a sexually explicit rating. That's how intense this is becoming. And the pressure to rate books and to screen books and to stigmatize them so they don't get sold. Sometimes we see books with racial content, and other times it's just, sometimes we're just baffled, like graphic novel versions of 19th century literature that are being censored because the way it's depicted, like Anne of Green Gables, that was the funkiest case that I had come across. Because of the implication, the way that was pictured, it was seemingly implying that they were involved in a lesbian relationship, even though the actual words and the scenes were taken verbatim from the book itself. So we're hearing that because it's in picture form, that it is it makes more of a corrupting impression on the young mind. And while young people can take it in the text, seeing in the picture is too dangerous.
It is, that is like straight out of when I was in high school. I did a report on Frederick Wortham, and I was like, it was like this was, it was nonsense then, and it's crazy. We have so much, we're seemingly so much further along, and we're literally back doing the same regressive stuff, pivoting slightly off of this bleak outlook and the bleak reality we have here. What are something, maybe Dennis, from you, for comics and graphic novels you're reading now, or something that is like really exciting you about what's happening now? And same for you, Jeff.
Let me just add a couple of examples that happened some years back, but it was with Diamond Distribution, which every publisher needs. It's a lifeblood to get into the shops, as you know.
Yeah.
I twice published things that they didn't want to put in the catalog just because of the title they saw before the book was even published. One was Goodman Beaver by Harvey Kurtzman and Will Elder, a classic, because it had beaver in the title. another, I published a title called Hitler's Cocaine, and they said, well, we can't distribute something with cocaine.
We can't have Hitler cocaine. Be besmirched here.
I'm not promoting cocaine. It's Hitler's cocaine. Context. So sometimes it's just stupid, the knee-jerk reaction that people will have, partly in fear. The distributor was fearful of the blowback they might get, so they were reflexively pre-censoring. So again, it's across the board.
I mean, you touched on this a little bit now, Dennis, but is there any amount of frustration based on the fact that you started the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund so many years ago? And I know these things are always ongoing, but did you feel like we would be farther along than we are in terms of society, I guess?
Well, I'm an optimist by nature, but no, in this case, I know enough of history and human nature that I think I realized there would be more than that originating case, that Friendly Frank's case back in the late 80s that triggered this. I had the opportunity after we won that case on appeal to just end it and donate the money in the bank to another charity. But I remember thinking to myself, there's probably going to be other cases, and there obviously were. And what I learned is that there had been cases previously, but they never got national publicity. So if you were, you know, in Birmingham, Alabama, and your shop was busted, no one outside Birmingham would have heard about it. So one thing the CBLDF did was it gave an umbrella organization to the entire comics industry, mainly retailers, so that if you have a problem, you immediately get legal aid. And in the past, more often than not, and almost always, that shop owner would be intimidated. So, yeah, I don't see it going away. I wish there was no longer a need, but I don't think I can be that optimistic.
I want to turn the conversation back to the documentary for a second. There, beyond talking about your career in comics, another thing that the documentary delves into is your career in collecting, Dennis. And you are an avid collector as well. Would you mind, for those who don't know, if you could talk a little bit about some of your collections?
Well, I guess directly to your audience, I collect original comic art. That's a normal thing. But I delve into things like vintage postcards from the early 1900s, especially politically incorrect postcards that were astonishingly offensive. When you think of our culture 100 to 125 years ago, you could buy a postcard for a penny and mail it for a penny through the postal system that would include the most misogynistic and racist and cruel imagery you can imagine. And so in that sense, I would say, yeah, we've improved. You can't mail those publicly anymore. But it's something that I'm find oddly compelling. And so I have at this point, not just the offensive ones, but about 100,000 carefully cataloged postcards.
Oh my God, that's a lot.
Wow. And you know, a lot of other things that range from tin toys and big boy Cupies.
Yeah, I saw in the
on and on.
In the trailer, I think we saw you had a big boy in your backyard. Is that? Yeah, how many big boys do you have?
Yeah, there's one in my office too, plus a lot of the small versions. I tend to be compulsive. If I like something, I'm all in.
When, I mean, maybe you can't pinpoint this, but just to use the big boy collection as an example, what's the point when you know you went from like, oh, I'm picking up a couple of big boys to, now I have hundreds.
All big boys.
I'm all big boys all the time.
Usually it's my wife who says, enough.
Yeah. that's all you need to say. What is it about big boy?
That? Yeah.
Oh, definitely. When you said I collect comic art, I was like, tell that to my wife. But what is it about big boy that's so oddly compelling?
You know, just childhood memories, favorite restaurant. Thought it was a really cool trademark. I also think it's interesting the way it evolved. When it began in the 40s, the trademark was a overweight boy holding a big hamburger. And as the years went by and the owners of Big Boy realized it probably isn't good to advertise via an obese trademark, they gradually slimmed him down. And now he's skinny, and I don't know why you could even call him big. He's now skinny boy.
And I did want to ask you about one other collection that you didn't mention, and I apologize if I'm getting the name wrong, but I believe you have a Valley of the Frankenstein dolls. Is that correct?
Yes, I do. That's not a collection as much as an art installation, if that's the right word. So I collect hundreds, at this point probably a couple of thousand, old, abandoned, lonely dolls, and they now line a long path winding through my woods.
Oh, my God. That sounds so creepy. Holy shit.
Don't get lost there at night.
Oh, my God. That is a nightmare.
Oh, yeah. If any of your listeners are horror film directors, you know, let me know. But, you know, it just started as a lark for my own amusement, and it got out of control.
Have you ever heard anybody screaming in your backwoods, just stumbling upon it?
Well, people don't usually stumble across it, but okay.
That's good.
My partner, a few years ago, when he saw it for the first time, stopped midway and turned to me and said, are you going to kill me now? That's when I realized how creepy it might be to those who can get that it was my sense of humor, really.
Yeah,
it's brilliant. Sounds brilliant.
To wrap this up a little bit and talk about the documentary again, I know you're both sort of stepping away from the Kickstarter a little bit, but what can people expect from it? What will pop up on the Kickstarter that maybe you're excited about seeing, because I know you don't want to see yourselves on the screen?
Well, I think for comics fans, it'll be seeing a long career. I've been doing this for, I think, 55 years. So
wow, amazing.
I began with underground comics, and a lot of, you know, young fans don't even know what that is or have only the vaguest notion of it. And I think it just shows some people I've been lucky enough to work with over the years, like Will Eisner, Harvey Kurtzman, Robert Crumb, down the list. I've been fortunate to have published early enough and at a time when those giants of the industry were accessible to a small publisher. I couldn't compete with Marvel and DC on any economic level, so I tried to beat them through pure talent and by not doing superheroes. That did not interest me. So it's kind of like a 50 plus year evolution of the hobby, the industry, and seeing people I knew along the way, and comment on the society changing.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah, pretty amazing.
I got to say, from my standpoint, and one of the things I love about the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund and what Dennis did in creating it was it really was an ideal way to start a nonprofit. Is he brought the greats together that he talked about. He brought ordinary fans together, readers and creators and everybody, to help protect the art form and to celebrate the art form and to show why it mattered. And what's great about the Kickstarter and this documentary is I think it's going to bring the whole comics community together to celebrate Dennis and his work and his influence. And that's incredibly important in times like this.
And just to ask you this as well, if you want to support or if listeners want to support the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund as well, what's the best way of doing that, either financially or otherwise?
You can join the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. CBLDF.org is our website. Become a member. Every membership helps. We have auctions at San Diego Comic-Con, and we're going to have others announced throughout the year. And we also have a network of volunteers. In fact, I'm going to be emailing them in the next week or so, because we have a number of cases that I'd like to bring some people in on. All of those, whether you're volunteering at a convention, volunteering your legal services, web support, all the different ways that people have offered to help us. We need everything in order to do the work that we're doing.
If you ever need three podcasters to run defense on a case or something like that, don't ask us.
I will let you know. That's actually something we're talking
about. Rough anybody up, really? You know, shake them down.
You got it.
But, by the way, you guys don't know this, but you have a first tonight. Jeff's done many podcasts, so have I, but we've never done one together before.
Hey, all right, great to have you. It's an honor.
Awesome.
It definitely is.
Guys, thank you so much for coming on. So excited to check out this documentary. It's going to be awesome. And so
thanks
excited
for all
to
your great work.
Wander your woods in the middle of the night.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Thanks. Let me know when you're in the neighborhood.
You'll hear the screams. Yeah,
you'll hear us.
All right. Good night, guys.
All right. Bye.
Take care.
All right. There we go. Once again, that was Dennis Kitchen and Jeff Trexler. And
so cool.
Oddly Compelling is the name of the Kickstarter. You can sign up on Kickstarter at the pre-launch page now. It should be launching pretty soon. No announced date yet, but hopefully later this month. So sign up to find out what is coming up. And we did really talk about this part, but there is a ludicrous amount of talking head type folks in the movie as well.
Trailer's awesome. It really, it follows a lot of paths, it feels like, and that's really exciting.
Yeah, it's cool.
Well, you know what else follows a lot of paths, Justin?
What?
Oh, helping Alex out.
is some wacky races. And as it turns out, we have the writer of Giant Size Wacky Races from Dynamite on the show next, Ivan Cohen. Ivan, welcome. Hello.
Welcome.
Hey.
Thank you. You know, if I'm going to be, playing second, third fiddle, I don't know how it works when there's two.
How many fiddles we got here?
Being behind, Dennis Kitchen and Jeff. That's the standard from now on.
Yeah. Your openers, that always. Yeah,
exactly.
People should support the CBLDF. It's amazingly important. And Jesus, Dennis has done so much stuff. Just keeping the spirit, literally keeping the spirit alive.
Yeah. Sure.
Amazing.
And you are carrying on the torch in Giant Size Wacky Races.
Thank you. That is not a stretch at all. It's also really a book about freedom. I think that's freedom of expression, freedom to wear weird outfits and drive strange cars.
Well,
exactly.
We were sort of making fun, but it was very obvious to me reading this, to jump right into the book. Wacky Race is pretty light fare, but you add a lot of sort of bigger ideas to this, and I'm curious how you developed the way into this book.
Wow, cool. Very, you're the first people I've talked to about the book who've actually gotten to read it. So this is very rare.
Great job.
It was as simple as trying to figure out a way to make Wacky Races make any kind of sense as a comic.
Nice.
If you didn't, there would be a totally valid way to do it where it was just sort of set, I've written Roadrunner comics. Roadrunner comics, you don't learn a lot about the backstory of Coyote and Roadrunner, and that's fine. You don't know if there's a housing complex right outside of the desert where they're running around and people call and complain about the noise or the explosions. But to do a comic about Wacky Races, and when Joe Rybant told me we'd have 40 pages to play with. It's like, well, it can't just be, you know, no backgrounds, just cars chasing each other around for 40 pages. Like, I think people would get, what's the word, bored. Bored out of So trying to figure out a way in, trying to figure out why the wacky races would exist, what they would mean to people. And, I mean, not to be too high-minded about it, but you asked. It's it's about trying to figure out if there were some sort of cross between wrestling and Formula One or NASCAR, how would that work? Why would the cars look like that? Why would the drivers dress like that? What would be the motivation for any of it? And from there, just played with stuff, thought about post-apocalyptic, quickly remembered I didn't want to do that. And then this is where we land with the incredibly cool Penelope pit stop.
One
of the things that I thought was really interesting about it was, beyond this depth, that you're setting it up in a one shot. That's a little bit different from the ongoing other series that Dynamite has been doing with Warner Brothers, like Space Ghost, like Johnny Quest, etc. So you have a limited amount of real estate to tell the story you want to tell. What are the challenges there in terms of setting this up, reinventing it like you're talking about it, but packing it into this one issue?
Oh, it's so weird to talk about there being challenges because 40 pages is so many pages. But trying to make it feel like we want to do more. I think it will be pretty obvious to anybody who reads it. It's like I feel like it's a complete story. I think we did that. But it also, I think we raised as many questions as we answered.
Yeah.
I mean, not about Muttley. Still not. Nobody's going to, you know. I'm not even sure I know for sure about Muttley, but no.
There were some questions raised about Muttley, I gotta say. You upturned my understanding of Muttley. And before we go too much further, should we explain what wacky races are in general, in case people don't know?
Are you saying anyone could not know about wacky
races? I'm looking at our YouTube analytics right now, and it says most of our audience was alive in 1968, I believe.
Yeah. Wow, so fast analytics. People really putting their data down.
And watched one season of a television show back then.
Oh my gosh. I'm not looking at the comments at all, but you know, there's an observation that mindless driving works for Fast and Furious. And I'm just going to say that's a lack of understanding of the Fast and Furious.
Wow. go to bat for the Fast and the Furious. Vin Diesel to the bone over here.
It is a franchise about family.
Exactly.
Oh, I've never heard them say that. Do they talk about that at all in the movies?
I don't think it gets mentioned. It's
subliminal. Yeah, yeah.
You just got to know the family.
I thought it was a big Corona ad. Is that? Was I wrong about that?
Could be two things, Alex. You could have a family Corona ad.
In a world,
it's an ad for families.
Where there is no Victoria.
In a world.
But yes, to get back to it, what is the pitch? What's the concept for Wacky Races?
Yeah.
The Wacky Races, as originally conceived, was a world where there were races and people drove in these races, and there were people like Penelope Pitstop, who was a Southern belle, vaguely obsessed with her own appearance, who drove a car called the Pink Pussycat. There was a driver called the Red Max who was a German fighter pilot driving a World War I biplane. As one does. And there were many others. There were Dirk Dastardly and Muttley, where Dirk Dastardly was sort of a silent movie villain with a giant mustache that he could, you know, twist maniacally. And Muttley was a dog in a coat and a hat. And they had a lot of races. And I don't want to insult the source material by saying that's all it was, but
well, I think we could say, like, it's when a bunch of Hanna-Barbera animators took some of Hitler's cocaine and created an animated show. I think that's correct.
What makes it really feel timely is to point out that it was based on a movie called The Great Race that was, like, a decade old, at least, when Wacky Races. So I think it's important that we keep this as contemporary as the late 1950s or the late 1960s. That's what I was brought in to do.
It is funny, though, because I, in all honesty, I don't think I have ever seen an episode of Wacky Races. But as soon as Dynamite announced this, I was like, oh, yeah, Dirk Dastardly and Muttley. I know them. Yep. And I was like, how?
Well, you may be thinking about the Laugh Olympics, which was a follow up to the Wacky Races.
Yes, come on, man. Mm. Get it.
But I got that on the USA Cartoon Express, I believe, which show Wacky Races and Laugh Olympics, which was always an epic, because we didn't have cable, but my grandma did, Care Bear Bunch. And you'd get all this absolute nonsense. I was like, this is a fever dream of animation that I'm watching right now.
Fever dreams, nice. Acid trip, another way you want to call it.
100%.
Too many Red Bulls, not enough sleep. You know, there's a lot that happens.
Let's talk about the art on the book a little bit. This is done by Mariano Benitez Chapo, who was a student at the Qbert School. Big fans of the Qbert School.
Yeah,
But it's a really interesting, darker look for the book, I would say, than I think you would expect from the title Giant Size Wacky Races. What was it like working with that and leaning into that potentially?
That was really fun. He is a bigger Wacky Races fan than I am, and certainly bigger than I expected, because he's not, you know, we don't talk about a gentleman's age, but, you know, I'm old enough to remember the Wacky Races.
Yeah, he's not in the Wacky Races demo.
No. Is there a demo?
Well, I mean, you're looking comic, at it,
the
I
demo
think.
Is everyone. But,
that's right. That's exactly.
But
right.
He, when we started talking about it, he had the notion of trying to do something, I wouldn't say Roger Rabbit style, but he was like looking at the Batman Porky Pig comic from DC, like this idea of sort of having a realistic look for the people and a slightly cartoonish look to the cartoon characters. And, you know, or the more cartoony cartoon characters, like Penelope is definitely a real person in the universe of this book. And I think he started working on it that way and then sort of moved it all into being a little bit more of the slightly stylized but generally realistic vibe, which I think works. I think it makes
I agree.
Care. Yeah. Nobody wants to see like a very cartoonish character necessarily bleeding or escaping from a fire. I mean, I shouldn't say nobody. People have the right to like what they like. Again, cbldf.com. But but that's where we landed. And he was such a big fan. There's a character in there that he was like, I'm basing it on, and he mentioned this name. It was like, he was like a European race car driver in the 70s. I was like, I'm going to take your word for it and say that's great, because I have.
The passion for it jumps off the page. I think it really does. It does a great job of feeling like, you know, bringing you back to the cartoon, but putting a little different spin on it.
Well, I like the way you sort of like grounding, it's the wrong word, but you get the wackiness of the races, but like you're saying, like a real underpinning of why people would do this. I think the comparison to like pro wrestling, but with big fast cars, I think is really great. I like, that's a great pitch for the book, because that's what comes through. As soon as you said that, I was like, yes, that's exactly what it is.
Awesome. I'm glad to hear that. I mean, it's also, you know, it's the Rose Parade if it were going 90 miles an hour.
See, now I want to see that. That's what I want to see every year.
What about your approach to writing the races themselves? Because that feels like potentially a tricky thing to do. How did that actually work out in the script?
Painfully. It took a lot. I mean, part of what I think was, I never talked about this with Joe Rybant, the editor, specifically, but I think part of the, I don't know if this is why they did it, but part of the advantage of having it be 40 pages in a one shot as opposed to, you know, 20 pages at a throw miniseries, is in a miniseries, I think you would have to have, there would be a sort of a sense of an obligation of, you're going to have a race at the end of every issue. Like, the book's called Wacky Races. There better be a race. And I think that would be diminishing returns if every issue had to end with a race and, like, you know, who won this issue? Oh, no, it's not the hero of the book. It's someone else. I guess they'll win next issue. Oh, no, they can't win then because there's still three more. Like, I think that would be
like playing Mario Kart for like 40 minutes.
Yeah. which people can do. I mean, that's the thing we're competing with. So it becomes, so I think doing the races, sort of weaving them into the story, and for people who are watching, it's there's sort of like competitive heats building up to the big, you know, final wacky races, sort of like, you know, Daytona 500 or whatever. Like, there are other smaller races, but there's a big race at the end that our characters have qualified for. The other challenge, just from a comic standpoint, is having characters talk to each other while they're driving doesn't, like, once you're even the slightest bit realistic, having characters talk to each other while driving, you know, 100 mile an hour vehicles doesn't make any sense. So working around that, so it's not just a wall of narration from each of them, that was a challenge. I wrestled with it a lot. I don't think it's as hard as, say, doing comics about bands, which I think is the other incredibly challenging, how do you capture that vibe thing in comics, but it was right up there. It was certainly the hardest. It was certainly one of the harder things I've ever dealt with.
Now, I do want to mention, before I forget, that every week on the show, we have a professional chef down in New Orleans named Brett Macris.
Stray Bullies,
who either creates or curates a cocktail for us. And this week he did one based on Wacky Races. It is Penelope's Pit Stop, which is gin, orange liqueur, pomegranate juice, fresh raspberries, plus a little for garnish, mint leaves, and... tonic to top. There you go.
Nice.
Yes.
I don't want to criticize anybody.
Okay.
That's not why I'm here. I don't want to criticize you guys. If I could have had this recipe before the start, I'd be drinking one right now.
That's a good note. That is a good note. We should do that going forward. Email the guests and let them know, rather than surprise them where they have to read an entire recipe live on the show.
Hey, thanks for doing the show. Go to the store and get some raspberries, because you're making a cocktail tonight.
That'd be fine.
Yeah.
No, that sounds good.
It's very refreshing.
Oh, did you make it?
No, but Brett posted a picture of him drinking it. That was refreshing. Fresh raspberries in this economy, Alex? What am I?
I don't know.
I'm not some sort of Muttley.
Yeah,
who's
next week on the show, our cocktail will be like, well, it's sewer water. That's all we can afford at this point.
Yeah, the cocktail for our talk about the trials and tribulations of the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund was just lukewarm whiskey. So you can see how pairing it with different things.
Yes. Ivan, other than this, what else should folks check out from you? What else do you want to plug?
Well, I think the next thing I've got coming up that I can talk about, because I work on many secret things, Teen Titans Go number 3 comes out from DC in early May.
That's very fun.
Reborn series. Oh, it's a lot of fun. I love those idiots. They're amazing. This issue is based on, you know, you try to draw inspiration from all the great works. So this issue is based on an episode of Three's Company from late in that show.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Wow. Where Jack has to pretend to be his identical twin cousin from Texas, who is, of course, named Austin, because that's a
smart. Keep it simple.
Yeah. So Robin is sort of tricked into having to pretend that he is an identical twin cousin, who of course is Texas Robin. So he is, and in the spirit of the TV show and the comic, he is more popular with both fans and his fellow Titans than the original Robin, despite doing nothing other than wearing a cowboy hat and like a fringe cape. So everyone is very moved by his charisma.
That's fun. In the future, we'll always have the great works to look back on. The Odyssey, this Three's Company episode you're talking about, they're always there for us.
And I like to think Giant Size Wacky Races number 1 on sale.
There we go.
Coming from Dynamite at the same price as their regular size comics.
Woo, that's nice.
Savings. That's savings right there.
Economy. You're paying less per page to get even more adventuring.
It's financially responsible.
Classic Dynamite reverse tariff is what we like to call it.
That's what put that on the cover.
100%.
Yeah.
It's testing.
There's other stuff coming. I do a lot of work for DC in custom comics. So there's you know, secret projects related to the Superman movie coming up. There's an experience that I've written a comic to accompany featuring some of your favorite heroes.
Wow, that's nothing. Cool.
I've said too much already.
I was going to say, I feel like that's something you could never talk about.
Well, eventually it's not like, it will happen, and then people will see it.
I see. Oh, it's not. It does. It's something that other people see. It's not just exclusively for
a particular subset.
It's not a personal experience.
It seemed like it was like, we give this to someone who has us make it, and that's the end of it. No one says a thing.
I would take that job for the, you know, for the right
A million money, percent,
but,
yeah.
There you go. But no. I got to write a Superman thing with Crypto. Again, I can't say anymore, but it's so
good. I don't know. If we keep you talking and we get one of these raspberry refreshers in your hand.
Yeah, go to the supermarket, go to the liquor store, come back, and we'll keep talking. We'll just see what happens.
Not going to happen.
Yeah. Ivan, thank you so much for coming on. Congrats. The book is great.
Yeah.
I do have to, you know, fanboy out a little to say, first time, long time, I remember coming to the pit. My early days of comics professionalness.
That's awesome.
That's very nice to hear.
The room's more comfortable. No offense.
Yeah. Wow. Burn.
I got to pick my own chair. I don't have to sit next to anybody weird. You know, it's pretty good.
Yeah, that was part of our charm, we thought.
Guess not. Ivan, thank you so much for coming on. Have a great night.
Come back again. Tell us secrets.
And next time.
Take care. All right, there we go. Once again, the book is called Giant Size Wacky Races. It's coming out April 23rd from Dynamite, and it is a lot of fun.
Hey, Kristen, how's it tracking?
With Carvana Value Tracker?
What else?
Oh, it's tracking. In fact, Value Surge Alert, trucks up 2.5%, vans down 1.7%.
Just as predicted.
Mm-hmm.
So, we gonna...
I don't know. Could sell, could hold.
The power to always know our car's worth.
Exhilarating, isn't it?
Tracking.
Always know your car's worth with Carvana Value Tracker.
And folks, we're going to move on to our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It is your audience questions.
I like how in the comments people are trying to call dibs on who the weird person was. They're like, no, I was the weird one sitting next to him.
Here's the thing.
No,
it was all of you.
Yeah, it was all of you. I think that's the lesson that Ivan is saying as well.
If you would like to ask a question, drop it in the comments on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitch. While we're waiting for those, what are you guys drinking this evening? Pete, surprise us.
It's the last one, Alex. You'll be happy to know it's the last longboard.
No, it's okay. I like a longboard.
People, sound off in the comments. Where should Pete go next with his one case of beer he buys every, five, 6 weeks?
I think we mentioned sewer water. You can just dip right in there and get it for free.
Dip right in.
The only thing, you got to watch out for the Pennywises.
Yeah. Pennywises? You're saying there's one Pennywise
Pennywise is
per location? Per,
yeah, I mean, he can't be at every sewer grate eating children's arms or whatever.
Wow, so it's like an underground Santa, is what you're saying. Unter Santa is Pennywise. Or it's like a cockroach where you see, like, well, you see one Pennywise, you're going to see more. There's more out there.
Yeah, more out there.
Nat Towson says Pennies Wise, I think is like, that's exactly how you say it.
J.C. Penney's wise?
Yes. The Big says, Clever Real Estate recently named Rochester the number one pizza city. Thoughts?
What?
I think that's a no.
Well, if you're going to TK's Pizza, it is. So,
describe us the difference between Rochester that makes Rochester Pizza so special by this, named by this clearly Rochester-based real estate agency.
Well, I'll tell you what I like about the Rochester pizza is it's a little doughy. So when you dip it in a blue cheese, you know, it just it sops up your sauce a little bit. So
you're
it's
saying
nice.
It's bread. It's more of a bread dish.
It's a little bready. Yeah. Yeah. But it's fluffy bread.
That's not pizza.
Really selling it.
That's not pizza. What the?
Don't. Huh? I mean, it's not. But I appreciate it. Sounds like a very
first of all, you haven't had it. Second of all, you're just
pizza.
You don't know what you're talking about.
I've had doughy pizza. I would argue Rochester pizza is probably pretty close to Syracuse pizza, which is just a little bit more dough because they're just like, we don't know what we're doing. We live up here.
How dare you?
Yeah, we're on a carousel right now. We can barely keep track of this dough.
The carousel's doing the spinning.
Yeah, it's crazy.
This is from Stray Bullet. I want to take Justin's Secret Barbie's Dream House quiz.
I'm glad you asked. All right, let's get into the Dream House.
Ooh, he was so close.
Just kidding.
I don't know if that's technically allowed.
What's not?
Wait, what? That's actually close to one of your quizzes, Pete?
That's right. It is.
Wait, what? What? You have a quiz about me and my Barbie Dream House?
Yeah, Noah. That sentence is just a little too long.
What the fuck? Why are you taking ownership? This is my... Get out of my lane. Justin's Secret Barbie Dream House is Justin's Secret Barbie Dream House.
Okay, well, I'm not trying to do anything with a dream house.
So you're saying Barbie. If somebody said something like, I want to take the Secret Barbie's Dream House quiz, maybe they'd unlock it.
Nope.
There's like a one... No,
the op... You're saying the opposite thing. You're leaving out the wrong thing.
All I'm saying is if you leave out one word from what Stray Bullet just said, you'll unlock the quiz.
If you leave out the last part and just keep the first part of that's what's on the screen right there.
I want to take Justin's Secret Barbie's Dream House?
No, I want to take Justin's Secret Quiz.
Oh, I see. It's just the Barbie Dream House.
Aha! I tricked you. Back to hell with you, Pete. All right. Great. Somebody
leave
asked
that for
that,
the future.
Yeah. Yes. That's a little Chekhov's gun for later on in the show. Derek Maynard says, if you were doing the Week in Geek in the 1970s, what TV shows would you be discussing?
Oof, great question.
MASH? Did that come out?
Chips?
A little late for MASH. Chips, maybe? I don't know. Let's remember that back then there was no
Starsky
prestige television. All of TV was considered trash in the culture. So yeah. It was like, I mean, the
Price
Rockford
is
Files.
Right?
The Rockford Files would be the most thing, the thing I would want to be talking about.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Three's Company, comedically. I mean, we'd be talking Brady Bunch because it was just out there.
Oh, yeah.
Phenomenon.
I don't think I'd be into TV. I would talk cinema.
Oh yeah, boy, right. Geez, what are you, cocky?
Fuck you,
get out
Cornell,
of here.
You fucking piece.
Over
you
Twitch,
wouldn't watch TV in the 70s? I don't believe you. Why?
On Twitch? I don't know, because it was not good enough. I would prefer to stick to the movies, to the films.
Oh yes, you would have been like the waiting
French
for
connection.
Prestige TV.
Yes. This doesn't seem long enough and tedious enough.
Why is there no murder at the beginning of the season of The Love Boat when they could clearly murder and comment on the excesses of rich culture that is going on here? And perhaps a cousin could jerk off or a brother could jerk off his brother.
Whoa.
Yes.
It got weird at the end.
The 1970s where brother jerked off brother.
What is happening?
We're talking about the White Lotus. Don't worry about
White
it.
White Lotus.
Hartford,
catch up.
Get with the culture, Pete. Hartford 1988 on Twitch says, with the passing of Val Kilmer, what is the one of his films that is a must-watch? Oh my
Tombstone.
God.
Tombstone.
Nostalgia.
For me, Top Secret for Pete.
Oh, Top Site. Top Secret is great.
I mean,
Tombstone.
Everyone's,
I mean,
everyone's talking well.
Down by the
on, everyone's upset about that.
Must-watch, Top Site.
I mean, got two guns, one for the each of
yes, 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 yes. The ones that Pete's talking about, Tombstone, great movie. Yep. Heat is the other one that I think people will tell you about.
Well,
Top Secret. You got to say your thing, Pete. Let me say my thing. My thing is Willow, and I was going to say everyone's going to talk about the big ticket items. Top Secret is like. A good under one, but Willow is Val is so awesome in Willow, and there's never been a moment when you will believe in love as hard as when he and Saoirse fall in love. Willow's one of my favorite movies of all time. You can make a quiz about me, but you stay out of my fucking Willow lane, Pete, or I will feed you Blackroot.
These are all good choices and probably better choices than this, generally speaking, but I'll mention it anyway for a specific reason. But MacGruber, which is actually a very funny movie.
Yeah, so
there
funny.
Is, if you haven't read it yet, on Vulture, they had a As Told To from Will Forte about Val Kilmer.
So good.
Will Forte, beyond being talking about like how we convinced him to be in MacGruber, which is just this crazy dream thing that we never thought would happen. After that, Val Kilmer was like, hey, I'm going to be in town for a little bit. Can I stay with you? And Will Forte said, oh, yeah, sure. That sounds fine. You're going to be a couple of days. and Val Kilmer ended up living with him for 3 months. Yeah. And he tells these amazing stories about Val Kilmer. It's so good.
It's the best, especially if you're a fan and want to like feel something about his death that isn't sad. This article is such a good salve for that. Like, mm-hmm. It's so nice. The other thing, Frederica Rosa shouts out Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. Another, if you haven't seen that movie, great movie, Robert Downey Jr.
His favorite was Saint, though.
Val's?
Yep.
Well, yeah. Okay. That's a little self-serious if you are, like, his other, someone, I was listening to something, they were talking about how, like, he's an A-list actor, but his best roles were when he was the second actor on the call sheet, mm-hmm. and he just delivers these killer performances. I think it is true.
It's not true.
You know what it was? It was the Daily did on their weekend edition. They had an article about Val that was this reporter couldn't get an interview with him forever, and then in pandemic got one, and it's a great listen if you're a Val fan. But talks about how his best roles were his second. Because that's what all the ones we've said. True. Heat, Tombstone.
I'm purposely leaving one out because it's a part of trivia. But I also think that the one where he played a blind artist that was beautiful that he did. He did some, and he was the top billed one. I don't want to hear that shit.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. There's definitely one that it's very funny we didn't bring up on a comic book show, but I'll leave it to you to guess which one that is.
Yeah, well, of course. But, like, that's it. I think he's good in that movie, but it's not, like, the one you want to sit down and watch maybe right now.
Terrible movie. Bandito740 says, if you guys were wacky racers, what would your theme be? Would you put wheels on the bottom of your triple-decker bunk bed?
That would be a precarious way. And then at one point we would split the bunk beds and all have separate wheels and just bang into each other.
Definitely fun times.
Great question. I could put wheels on this Barbie Dreamhouse and ride that shit for forever.
Nice.
It's made of very flimsy plastic.
How does it work? Are they themed specifically?
Yeah, they're themed around like Dastardly's V car was evil.
Yeah,
sure.
Muttley's is dog themed.
Mm-hmm. I'd probably be in like one of the candy racers from Wreck-It Ralph. I could roll with that. King Candy. Nice.
So you're basing this thing that's based on your personality and character on something from Wreck-It Ralph? Are you saying Wreck-It Ralph is the Alex Zalbin movie?
Yeah, it's the story of Alex Zalbin.
I watch it every day just to remind myself, you know.
Yeah. No,
he loves giant cherries. I see him munching on them all the time.
For Trigger Versus says, did you guys already talk about the cast of Doomsday? If not, what did you think? We have not talked about it. What did you guys think about this big 5.5 hour long live stream with a bunch of chairs that enraptured the entire world?
Well, I just got to ask, like, are the actors going to be in it or is it just the chairs?
Just chairs.
Just chairs. And Robert Downey Jr., who showed up at the end.
Nice. That's good. I mean, he can do anything. Mm-hmm. He can make anything interesting. I mean, what to say about the cast of Doomsday? Got a lot of them there. Yeah. They all seem involved. Like, that's the thing. Is like, what's the surprise? What are some of the surprises here? It's like all your favorites are back.
So I have gotten some normie questions about what the X-Men are doing there, and I think it's more readily apparent to us comic book fans. But just in case anybody listening doesn't know, this is pure speculation because we don't actually know the plot, but seeing the old X-Men pop up, like Alan Cumming, James Marsden, Ian McKellen, Patrick Stewart.
Emphasis on old. Many of them are very old.
There's definitely mixed feelings there. I have mixed feelings in general about, like, I've talked about this before. As much as there are fun things in the X-Men movies, hang their hat on the X-Men movies, a series that everybody felt like really ran itself into the ground and also never made the amount of money that the MCU did, I don't think is the smartest idea. Also, seeing them all come back, I was like, we just said goodbye to them. And the whole end credits of Deadpool and Wolverine was like, well, that's it for the Fox universe, and now here they are back again. So that was a little frustrating, even though I was like, ooh, James Marsden, that's fun. I like him. But here's what I do think is smart about it. I think we all assume that the plot is going to be roughly the Jonathan Hickman Secret Wars with a bunch of incursions happening and a bunch of Earths slamming together, leading to Battle World, a patchwork planet that Dr. Doom creates, right? Like, if this is the plot, Let's just assume it is for the moment.
I mean, I think it's a safe assumption based on the chairs.
Yes, a safe assumption based on the chairs. But the problem the MCU has right now is they don't have a lot of universes. They have the MCU. We're going to meet the Fantastic Four universe in Fantastic Four, which is coming out later this year and is directly before Avengers Doomsday. And that's it. So as soon as they announced the X-Men, and as soon as I got past the, like, how do I feel about this? I started to think, oh, it's actually a really good shorthand to make us care about another Earth that is likely going to get destroyed. Is it potentially manipulative? Sure. But throwing in these actors that we already know and have watched over the course of decades and have a relationship with on screen, thrusting them into this situation, it immediately creates another pivot, another Earth for us to have some drama about that doesn't otherwise exist.
You don't think there's anything in Thunderbolts?
Well, what? Well, no, they're on Thunder, Earth. They're in the MCU. So I think that's in direct contrast, just to kind of finish up with like the Illuminati in Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, which were all these actors who, for the most part, we were like, do they know each other? And then it turns out, no, they don't. They were in entirely different places.
Well, but let me say that the only problem with everything you said is they did it then. And then Deadpool sort of did that also in a way that was like, ha ha, this is funny and dumb. No one can do this again. And then they're sort of doing it again. Mm-hmm. So like, I feel like they're going to have to do a lot of work to make it not feel like a joke, I think, or not be tread territory.
Well, or not make it feel like they're just, what is it, like, I'm forgetting the phrase, but basically just like throwing them in the wood chipper there, being like, they're just there to die, which they certainly could be.
Well, that already happened twice. So like, right. I don't know what the point of that would be. I mean, there's certainly a way they could do it where they're going to introduce multiple other dimensions that mm-hmm. we haven't seen, but we'll be like, oh, that's interesting. Like, I feel like comics do that almost constantly at this point. Mm-hmm. So that would make more sense than trying to get us to live in the Fox universe again, that's been so beat up at this point. So I don't know, but either way, like, I'm not like sick Kelsey Grammer.
Oh man.
You don't like Down Periscope?
That was my exact thought. I was like, sick.
What?
Kelsey Grammer.
He sucks. And second, the Beast is fine, but like anybody can do it. Like, let's just do
It's just like a fun voiceover, you know, whatever. You know what I mean? It doesn't have to
be a good paycheck for him.
Yeah. Also, why didn't they use the first class X-Men?
I don't know. They're really good.
That would be way smarter. Much more recent, more popular, arguably.
I do think part of that, this is, again, pure speculation, but Kevin Feige started his career on the X-Men movies. That's where he was like, what was he, an assistant or something like that? Driving Hugh Jackman to the airport and being like, you got to stay as Wolverine. You got to do this.
And an actor wants to hear.
And he was always the comic book guy there. So I have to imagine this is decades of my life and I'm bringing this to a close potentially before he moves on to something new or whatever or something like that. I don't know. But I think this is very much a homecoming for him as well, working for those actors instead of the first class thing. One other thing that I will throw out there that I also think they'll have to do a fair amount of work on, but it'll be interesting to see, and I was glad to see, is ending with the last two chairs with Pedro Pascal and Robert Downey Jr. I think myself, as well as a lot of other fans, were worried that the main relationship in Avengers Doomsday was going to be Tom Holland, Spider-Man, and Robert Downey Jr., Dr. Doom, because he's the main one that's worked off of Iron Man. But it seems like they are actually doing Reed versus Doom as the main conflict there. So that's cool.
That is cool. Hopefully that'll be the case.
I want to believe that, but I don't think it depends on how far along in production they are on Doomsday, because I would be surprised if they were going to be like, let's pin all of our dreams for Doomsday on Fantastic Four crushing. Because if they're pinning that movie on this other previous movie, I think they, especially when they're paying so much for all these other actors, I feel like it's going to be more of an ensemble than that. Mm-hmm.
We shall see. Prediction. Why don't we move on to some other questions here? This is from Stanley. Have you seen a Minecraft movie? Do you like Jack Black's comedy? Two very different questions. Have you guys seen the Minecraft movie?
Have not. I was one of the few since it made like the most money.
It made the amount of money they expected it was going to make on opening weekend on opening day, which is bonkers.
Crazy. Good for movies in general. Wish the movie was better based on what I heard about it.
But, I went to see it with my son. Movie theater was packed.
Yeah.
Kids were losing their minds. It was like legitimately Avengers Endgame, but for a Minecraft movie. Every single thing when Jack Black is like, chicken jockey, they're like, going insane over it. The movie sucks. Like, it is a bad movie. And afterwards I had a quick check of like, is it just because I don't get Minecraft? And I was like, no, I don't think so. It's actually a poorly structured movie.
What did Milo think?
Milo also, he was kind of bummed out because he thought the trailer was so funny and all of his friends were talking about it. But he started dissecting it and was being like, yeah, the moments in the trailer, like, they spaced them out differently so the jokes didn't hit as hard. And I was like, my son, I've taught you so
much. Oh, my God. You must have been. That was like your chicken jockey is when your son was like, this movie stinks. And you're like, yeah.
I'm worried.
He was kind of bummed out. He was really, really dying to see it. And it just.
I think your son couldn't honestly tell you that he loved it. He
secretly No. I am very careful to talk to him about like whatever my feelings are. I always ask him first. I don't want to put any of my opinions on him, and I'm very careful. We had a conversation about it. But afterwards, he was like, huh, when we came out of the theater, and I was like, what did you think? And he's like, I don't know. That was interesting. Why do you think everybody was cheering so much?
Wow. These Philistines. Let me ask you a question that is maybe what Pete would ask you is, have you shown him John Carter yet?
Oh, a real blockbuster?
Yeah.
No,
a movie that you love.
Standard.
We're still watching the Star Wars movies. Then we got to get through a bunch of other blockbuster series, and it's all going to hit the pinnacle with John Carter.
The John Carter series, which, as we all know, is one film.
Straight but
the
bullet.
Answer the second part, yes.
Jack Black, very funny. I watched SNL that Jack Black hosted this past week, and it was a good episode of SNL.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
across the board.
He's a funny guy.
He's funny. Tenacious D, back in the day, was really great. I remember listening to their first album over and over again.
Yeah. And shouts to him having two of the five biggest openings of all time with two different video game movies.
He's a huge kids movie star. He's like one of the number one movie stars for like Gen Alpha or whatever.
It's crazy. I mean, the thing that really did blow me away even more than cheering for the Minecraft things was the meme moments from the trailer. Every kid in the audience was saying it along with the screen as soon as they happened with the same rhythm and everything. So like, they love it. They love Jack Black. They should really check out the Tenacious D movie. It's a good movie. Stray Bullet says, I listen to the very informative CBC News 5 days a week, and I'm wondering how tariffs are going to affect the comic book industry.
Real plug. Wow, you know who Stray Bullet sounds like is a Trump advisor talking about Trump right there.
Oh, man. It's a plant.
Well, maybe I am grooming him. I don't know what's happening.
Oh, man, don't make it weird.
It did occur to me that, Pete, when you say stray bullies to people that don't know what you're talking about, that sounds very strange. And I'm not saying stray bullet sounds better, but it's very funny that out of context, that's a nonsense word.
I'm very much out of context, so, yeah.
So the short answer is, at the current time, we don't know exactly what it's going to do to the comic book industry, just like we don't know exactly what it's going to do to the rest of the world. But here are some specific things that are happening right now. So we talked about before that the bulk of graphic novels, not all of them, but the bulk of graphic novels are printed in China. The bulk of monthly comics floppies are printed in Canada, but again, not all of them. China, apparently, the tariffs from China are not including books at the current time. So actually graphic novels printed in China are still going to be tariffed at the same rate they were for the previous Trump administration, which is 7.5%. Nothing has changed there. So that's kind of the good news. the Canadian tariffs still are what they are. The only immediate thing is that Todd McFarlane has apparently raised the price of Spawn comics from, I believe, $2.99 to $3.99. They were $2.99 for a really, really long time.
But he held the line at $2.99.
But I do think this is a little bit of supposition on my part, but the place where he's been hit really hard, but they are already raising prices, is action figures, because a lot of those are made internationally. So he's raising, I think they said, as judiciously as possible, the price of action figures, but I believe he's probably supplementing that with some of the Spawn comics as well by raising the price there. Anyway, again, the short version is like, we're going to see repercussions very soon. A lot of people have been canceling Kickstarters, I've seen, both on the comic book side, also the trading card side and collectible, tabletop game side and collectibles as well. But as for what it's going to mean for comic book companies and also comic book shops, we don't know as of yet, other than everybody panicking. That's kind of where we're at.
Yeah, I feel like it's just a microcosm for everything. So,
yeah,
hold the line. At $2.99.
Yes. What else have we got? A bunch of jokes about Doomsday going on here. Schreckler says, what's another formulaic cartoon you want to see expanded into something realistic?
Oh, wow.
Smurfs. Dark, disturbing Smurfs.
Oh, wow. Well,
I think there's a Smurfs movie coming this year, Alex, so maybe that will, maybe they will have taken your advice.
Mm, yes, I've seen the trailer, and it looks very serious.
Probably Jabberjaw.
Mm-hmm.
A serious Jabberjaw. I'd like to see the Laugh Olympics scandal comic.
Oh, wow.
Really get into some doping that...
too soon.
That Blue Falcon, was that his name? Mm-hmm. Was using.
Frederica,
I mean, that cybernetic body can't be legal.
Yeah. Frederica Rosa says, what is something you guys think was clearly made for a limited story, miniseries, one season, one movie, but stretched for longer because of its success? Oh my God, so many things.
Like most things? Most things that are long? All comics, technically? I think were meant to be like, let's do this as long as we can. But the first one that comes to mind is DC versus Vampires, something that just keeps going because it is being read.
Yeah, but it's great.
Well, but also Matthew Rosenberg was pretty open on the show where he was like, I thought this was going to end a bunch of times.
Yeah, man.
He seems ready to move on and do something else. But Bergie's
killing
him. He's killing it. It's a great series.
To continue, like, I mean, a lot of TV, similarly, like White Lotus, for sure, I think was meant to be, let's just do this during COVID, and now it's the biggest show currently outside of Adolescence.
Yeah. Oh, Frederica Rosa says, I meant to say something that didn't hit as well after. I don't know, on the TV bed, Big Little Lies had a pretty strong first season and then did not need to continue at all.
Yes. I mean, most things that are ordered for two seasons at once will maybe tail off a little bit at the end.
All right, and we got one last one to wrap up here. Last question. Stanley says, how can you read so many comics in a week? Great question. Just got to stick
with it. I delete other stuff in my brain.
Yep.
To make space.
Tough.
Yeah. I have no memories of my childhood at this point.
I got rid of those.
And yet.
That's what, whenever I drink a beer, I think of something I'm ready to forget and replace with comic book knowledge.
There you go.
All right. We are going to wrap up our audience questions and go to our next section, which is trivia. And for that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All right. Woo! This is the part we give back to the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free to Midtown Comics Online. Because if you had $25, you'd probably want some comic books.
Yes, and Pete, we actually have a contestant waiting in the wings today.
Oh, a wing contestant.
Yeah, a wing contestant. He is going to be eating some hot wings for us. That is not copyright by Hot Ones. We're going to be doing it right here. Here we go. Nat Towson, everybody.
Oh! Yay! We're doing cold apple. Cold apples.
Delicious pear. New coffee.
Pear.
Yeah, oh, man. Spicy. Oh, no.
Looking for mitts pears. In the background. Looking for mitts.
Nat, excited to have you play trivia here, but also you have something to plug, don't you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm going to plug that I'm going to be visiting Comic Book Club's table at the Brooklyn Independent Comics Showcase on April 26th and April 27th at Industry City, of course.
Wow. Yeah. Do you think myself, Justin, Ed, Pete are all going to be there at that table?
Wait, are you?
That would be crazy.
First simultaneous public appearance in New York of all three Comic Book Club hosts since the landmark
punching
final show before the pandemic. I guess when Pete punched me, but you were not all together in the same.
Yeah, place. Alex was not
no,
there.
I left at that point.
I saw all three of you that day.
You did.
I may be the only audience member who got the full experience.
Yeah, that was free Comic Book Day last year.
Yeah,
was that what it was?
Last time I saw Pete. I heard Pete's coming to New York. I'm very excited.
Yes, Pete is coming to New York. We're going to have a table. But there was also something you are doing that weekend, right?
Oh, Matt? You're right. I'm just so selfless. I wanted to talk about my passions.
Oh, my God. This is all a scam. He's running us. He's scamming us here, guys.
I think he's grooming us. Am I using the right word?
I don't think he's using this bit.
Yeah. I don't like this bit.
Alex will yes and anything. And I admire that. Sometimes. Gets him into some trouble, but I admire
him. Often. Well, he's the one who keeps saying stuff. He's yes-ending himself. He's grooming himself. Anyway, on the heels of that grooming conversation, what were you promoting?
Yeah, that's a great segue. How would Alex do this segue? You know what else I'm grooming? My hair before my big performance. Thank you. I'm only getting a haircut. This is true at my barber. I am doing my hour of stand-up comedy, which I've been doing on the road for most of last year in New York for the very first time. Coincidentally, after the first day of that very festival, about an hour after the festival closes, and I checked, and it is a 55-minute train ride from one to the other, 45 to 55, depending on when they come. So kind of perfectly spaced out, I would say. If you're interested, on April 26th at 7 p.m. in Hell's Kitchen.
Is it safe?
It is actually even safe when Frank Miller was writing about it. He was basing it on 10 years ago. It turns out it's mostly nightclubs and residential housing that I couldn't afford. In Hell's Kitchen, however, there's a great theater called ART Theaters, A-R-T-N-Y Theaters, like art, but it stands for something.
And, oh, no, yeah, I got that.
Thanks, Pete. We're same mind meld. Pete and I used to do improv. And
he was your teacher, I think. Right?
Pete, we have covered this on the show before. Pete was my level one improv teacher at the People's Improv Theater many years ago. We had a great time, great class. Mm-hmm. That was in the middle of my plug, though. I should get back to my plug, which is April 26th at 7 p.m. at ARTNY. I'm performing my solo stand-up hour, which is entitled Nat Towson, The Thinker. My super villain or superhero alter ego, depending on how the show goes. And I will be performing that in New York for the first time, and Pete will be there. So if you buy a ticket, you have a 2 out of 98 chance of sitting next to Pete.
Great. That's a great call. I think I'm going to be there. I think maybe all three of us are going to come from the Comic-Con to your show, and we're going to make a day of it. So that's,
and if you can all just sit separately to maximize the number of chances that someone from the crowd could sit.
Whatever you need.
I would love that. And again, that's Nat Towson, The Thinker. I'll drop the link in the chats for YouTube. I'm the only one on Instagram, but I'm dropping it there. Will Pete be showing up in New York in his horse and buggy?
Yes.
You know, Pete, I'm going to let you feel that one. I don't really get how they're zinging you.
Yeah,
Pete is the country bumpkin on the podcast.
Yeah, because I moved away from the city.
I associate that more with like New York in the Victorian era. Like I would have gone with, and this is no criticism in brainstorming, but will Pete be driving his tractor? Will Pete be walking barefoot from his hovel to New York City?
Where do I park my burrow? Says Pete.
Where does Pete tie? Where does Pete chain his mule? Or whatever.
Wow. Whatever horse adjacent.
You say grooming was the real problem here. Nat, do you want to win $25?
I would love to win.
Okay.
All right.
Today's trivia is about Transformers the movie from 1986 and a small nod to the legend Val Kilmer, RIP, absolute legend. Too many great movies to name them all. Please listen.
Name them.
Please listen to all three options before making your selection. Not all of them. Question number one. Are you ready, Nat?
I am ready.
We all know Orson Welles is the voice of Unicron.
But who is the voice of Ultra Magnus? Is it A, Robert Stack? B, dude, how are you going to make any profits on these tasty muffins? Penny Baker.
Wow. And I believe that was Orson Welles' last role. And he didn't know what it was. There's a great quote where he's like, it's about terrible toys that are mean to each other or something like that.
Great way to put it.
What have you seen? Some of his later work is amazing. The wine commercial. Very good.
Late period Orson Welles. So reasoning with that information in context, I would say A, Robert Stack.
A, really you good. Are correct. Mm. All right, here we go. Question number
Not
two.
Easy. Not easy.
A mistake in the movie. Who gets shot by Prime, but then see next like nothing happened? Is it A, Soundwave? B, okay, bro, you don't have to disguise it or hide it. Crying is good. C, John Grise.
What?
I'm going to go with A, Soundwave.
That's correct.
And it's Grease, right?
How is it Grease?
How dare you, Alex? Not now. Not
no, Alex, that okay. Oh, I'm sorry. That's like when your tears come out. It's cries.
Yeah, Alex has never cried.
He's never said that out loud.
He's only cried.
Yeah, he's only cried. He's never cried.
Yeah, that's gravy crying.
Yeah, oh, man. After Thanksgiving. Yeah,
nothing like a good gravy cry, I tell you. Last one, here we go. We all know Scatman Crothers was the voice of Jazz, but who voiced Galvatron? Is it A, Leonard Nimoy? B, okay, guy, we get it. Your parents are hilarious, bro. See Harry Johnson.
Hard to say, but I'm gonna go A, Leonard Nimoy.
You are correct.
Wow! Congratulations, really Nat. Nice. You have won a $25 gift card to Midtown Comics. Shoot us an email, and we will get that.
It can go right on your trophy wall, which you're clearly displaying.
Sure. Yeah,
I
exactly.
Show my fist here, but Pete does love to look at a nerd wall, so I'll give him some display here. Ooh, you know? I just moved in, so a lot of the wall's empty.
I would like to take the I just moved in quiz.
Okay.
Nice. Ooh, nice.
Yeah.
Wow, I unlocked it. That's amazing.
This tote bag behind me features a blown up piece of art from famous French cartoonist asterisk. B.
Oh, I'm sorry. MJ. I thought quizzes were like how many skulls do I have?
Oh, you're right. You're right. Sorry. How many tote bags are behind me?
20?
That's correct.
Wow.
Congratulations.
Do I win a $25 gift card to Midtown Comics?
You do have
recently acquired.
Yes. Excellent. Nat, once again, where is your gig? Where should people check out?
That's a great question, Alex. Oh, and I'm just going to point to this side of my nerd wall. What's that? Oh, it's a cue card from when I was on The Tonight Show. I guess you should come to my stand-up comedy show because I'm so legitimate. I keep it
hair. Is that covering your computer screen?
Those are several computers over there. Wow. I have not moved in.
It's very funny. Way, you don't use your computer. You look at your fame memory.
I'm holding another computer right now. That's what I'm talking to you on.
Yeah. Fair. By the way, I hope you don't take this the wrong way, but for anybody listening, Nat, you're not wearing your glasses right now. You look like your teenage son.
Yes, you do look very young.
Yeah, I don't need them for the screen. That's funny. I didn't think about my signature look. My branding is off. Yeah. But let me answer your question, which is that you should come see my stand-up comedy show, Nat Towson, The Thinker, on April 26th, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at ART/NY Theaters. And you can look it up. Tickets are available on Eventbrite on a sliding scale. More money means more money to the artist. But buy the cheapest ticket if that's what you can afford. It does not affect your seats. One more time, April 26th, 7 p.m. at ARTNY. That is Nat Towson, The Thinker. Oh, and I have two great comedians opening for me. Gaspar Almonte will be there. And
love Gaspar. Arnie
are both opening for me. And
that's awesome. Yeah, I don't know Brittany really well, but I know Gaspar from years of him doing my show, and he's so good.
Oh, he's excellent, and Brittany's one of my favorite comics right now. Just a unique voice, really idiosyncratic comedian who I think is so funny.
You can also just come to our table at the con and we'll all ride in together on the, I think you said 45 to 55 minute subway ride.
Yeah. You're going between. You're
really
going
between selling. Boroughs.
Buddy, that sounds long to people who don't live in New York. That's a breeze. That's how long it takes to get anywhere. So
and Pete,
also come to the I'll hover around that table. Maybe we'll all be down.
That's nice. We'll all go together. And Pete, when he says between boroughs, that doesn't mean two donkeys. He means between parts of the city.
I didn't have my mind erased when I left, you asshole.
You guys just said you erased your minds to read comic books.
Yeah. We just established this. Nat, thanks for coming on. Congrats on the gift card. And see
thanks
you
for
soon.
Having me. Love gift cards. See you Saturday.
Yep.
All right, and not just this to, Saturday.
Just to kind of, I was talking about the 1985 movie that helped me, Real Genius.
Nice.
See you later, Pete.
Did you cut him? No. Did he cut himself?
He said Real Genius and left the stream.
Yeah, that's well, so funny.
See you, never.
It really helped me. Real Genius. Smash.
And I'm done.
I don't know what just happened. I just hit eject.
That's great. You really, I thought that was the last time we would ever hear from you. You're like, you know what? I've had enough of this shit. You know what? That movie, I loved it. Good night and good
luck. You haven't let me get this out for 18 years.
It's the last thing I needed to do is say Real Genius.
All right. The last thing that we need to do is talk about New Comic Book Day, which is coming up tomorrow. What are you guys looking forward to that is coming out? Pete?
Well, I'm looking forward to Phantom Road number 11.
Oh, been a minute on that one.
Yeah, just kind of creepy, but amazing. And I've been really impressed by it. Storm number 7 has been really badass. I just love how... Storm feels so kind of elevated in this comic and kind of taken care of. So I've really been enjoying that. And then lastly, Transformers number 19. Woo-hoo-hoo! The kid in me is having the time of his life with this. So I'm very excited.
Now, Pete, all the Transformers you named in your quiz, some of those are made up, right?
Nope.
Like Galvatron's not right.
Come on, dude. Leonard Nimoy, put some respect on it, bro.
No, he was Leonard. Spock. I know he was Spock.
Spock. That's who you're thinking of.
Galvatron.
That's a ride at the county fair, if I remember correctly. I'm looking forward to Uncanny X-Men number 13.
Who's the bumpkin? You drank out of a well and went to a fucking county fair, dude.
A well's pretty high end. I could be drinking out of a creek like you are now. So, like, I think I'm a little...
Fuck yourself.
I think I'm a little one-up on you.
Yeah. Do you let the donkey drink first, or do you drink first, or you both just like get on down there at the same time?
No, when I saw Pete, he said donkey drink first, and we had to wait. He kept saying donkey drink first. I was like, from Shrek? I don't understand. And he's like, no, donkey drink first.
Well, it makes sense now, so.
Uncanny X-Men. Coming out tomorrow. Very excited. A new arc that I saw Gail Simone tweeting about how it was the arc she's been most excited about. So her excitement is translating directly to my excitement. Very excited for all of that. I'm mad at Pete for not saying Absolute Batman because Pete, I guess, hates Batman.
I've been loving every issue of that.
How could dare you? DC versus Vampires number 8.
Bergie.
Very excited for that. Like I was talking about earlier, loving it.
And
that's what we do now, right? It's like dropping the mic.
Yeah. You did the I'm loving it in peace. You're like, you work for McDonald's now?
I'm loving
it. It's a solid bit. Great. It's a solid bit.
All right. Two titles that I'll call out. Looking forward to the Great British Bump Off Kill or Be Quilt, number 1. The first series was a very fun cozy mystery series set at a Great British Bake Off style show by John Allison and Max Sarin, and this is the sequel to that, so excited for that. Also, Batman Dark Patterns, number 5 from DC Comics. That's by Dan Waters and Hayden Sherman, and this series has been a fantastic series of short 3-issue each murder Batman mystery stories. First one was really cool. Second one has been awesome as well. I think that is it for this week's show.
Woo-hoo!
A couple of people we want to thank Ivan Cohen for coming on talking about giant size wacky races. You can check that out April 23rd from Dynamite. Also, Dennis Kitchen and Jeff Trexler for Oddly Compelling, which will be on Kickstarter soon. Next week on the show, David Popose is going to be back to talk about Captain Planet. Also, Kevin Shinnick is going to be here to talk about Host Mortem, which would be very cool. Comic Book Club News, as plugged by my vassal, I guess I could say, Brett Macris, out Monday through Friday, every day of the week with your comic book news. Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast, talking about Daredevil Born Again right now. Patreon.com/comicbookclub. Support this show and all the shows we do. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Good night. Comic book club, comic book club. They sit on crappy couches and they let the secrets leak. And occasionally they let their special guest speak. So grab your grin.
This weekend only at Macy's, it's our lowest prices of spring. How low? Diamond rings, pendants, and earrings, only $399, originally $1,500. Ninja blenders, now $89.99. And $395 men's designer suits, only $99.99. So if you're wondering why you should shop Macy's lowest prices sale, well, the name pretty much says it all. It's our lowest prices for one weekend only. Starts tomorrow at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.